The following segment of Studio 360 contains explicit language.
Studio 360.
What a lot of people remember most about Richard Pryor is the album he made in 1982 after he accidentally set himself on fire while freebasing cocaine.
Catching on fire is inspiring. They should use it for the Olympics. Because I did the 100-yard dash in about 4:06.
That album, essentially the soundtrack of a big concert film, was live on the Sunset Strip. And it was a real-life Phoenix story. Pryor rising from the ashes and joking about the fire.
I got to the hospital. You can really tell when you fucked up when the doctor goes, ah! Holy shit. Why don't we just get some coleslaw and serve this up? What is that?
But that wasn't the first time Richard Pryor turned a hellacious part of his personal life into comedy. 4 years earlier, after he was arrested for firing a gun at a car that his estranged wife was driving, he made an album called Wanted, Live in Concert. That album turns 40 this year, and the experts pretty much consider it Pryor at his best, including the one who begins our story about the album.
My name is Howie Mandel. And I like to think of myself as a comedian who does other stuff too. I remember standing there, you know, I'm just a little kid from Toronto, you know, who had done stand-up at local clubs, and I'm looking at Richard Pryor walk on stage, and the electricity in that room was palpable.
Thank you all. Thank you. Thank you. I really mean I'm happy to see people that come out, especially after all the shit I've been in.
An important thing to understand about this album is that it came out of a tour that, in a sense, came out of therapy sessions. I am Scott Saul, and I'm the author of the biography Becoming Richard Pryor. Those therapy sessions were mandated by a court.
I remember I was going to my psychiatrist, and I would be rage, you know, rage. Mm-hmm. You know, and he'd be glad when I left. You know. Don't bring the personalities back next week, Rich, please.
I'm Elizabeth Storter Pryor. I'm one of Richard Pryor's daughters. So on New Year's Eve, when I was about 10 years old, my father was breaking up with one of his wives and ended up shooting her Mercedes as she tried to leave the property.
All I did was kill a car. You thought I'd murdered somebody. I thought it was fair myself, you know. My wife was gonna leave me. I said, not in this motherfucker, you ain't. I had a Magnum too, man. I shot one of them tires, boom. Tire said, ah. Got good to me. I shot another one. Boom. And that vodka I was drinking said, go ahead, shoot something else.
Police came. My father shot the gun. That really happened.
Then the police came. I went into the house. Because they got Magnums too. And they don't kill cars. They kill niggas.
I mean, that was something real that he had to contend with in that moment. So he's able to take this moment that was actually a crushing moment in the family and connect it to this really public reality, which is that black people were not safe around cops. It's pretty astute, and it's scarily still relevant.
And as a result of the legal action against him, he was ordered to engage in therapy sessions. And that led him to start keeping diaries and thinking a lot about his childhood. So when he came on the stage for the first time in this tour, he was bringing all this new material in which he was revisiting those parts of his past that had shaped him, some things that had, you could say, traumatized him, but it also made him into the man he became. Some of the most profound and moving and complicated and amazing material on this album comes out of that.
You know, my grandma would discipline me, I mean, beat my ass. I deserved them too. She used to beat my ass. Remember them switches you used to have to go get to yourself to beat your own ass with? And they had them leads on you to go.
One of the incredible things about that track, Discipline, is that he's playing three different characters at once. He's playing his grandmother.
Well, my grandma said, boy, go get me something to beat your ass with. And that would be the longest walk in the world.
He's playing the child he was.
Right, you'd be going in the house, that vine makes such a weird sound in your ear, you'd be going, it'd make you start crying before you get in the house, right? Mama! Mama, I'm good, mama!
And then you see Richard, the performer, looking at both himself and his grandmother, thinking, like, this made me who I now am.
I see them trees today. I stop the car and get out the car to kill that motherfucker. Right, I see what I say. You won't grow up, you motherfucker.
He has this violence within him that he can't quite control, and he's aware of that.
Everything he was talking about, if you took the humor and you took his lovability and likability out of it, it's incredibly painful. He took what could possibly be considered a tragic life or a tough life and made it funny.
He was scary to talk to, right? I say, hey, Dad, I'm going to the movie. You know, he say, say, nigga, you want to take that bass out your voice when you talk to me?
I'm going to the movie if you let me, Dad. Please, I hope it's okay.
You know, his father turns into this superhuman character who, when he punches him in the chest...
And my chest just caved in and wrapped around his fist and held it there. I wasn't letting that fist go. I didn't give a fuck what he did. My chest had that fist. Everywhere he moved his arm, I was hanging on.
It's a surreal description that makes us laugh because it's kind of wish fulfillment. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to do that. He was just beaten down by his father.
He was the true consummate poster boy for a sense of humor. And the sense of humor connotates having a sense that there is humor where other people don't see it.
And you know, I noticed that there's a difference in funerals. Like, white people have funerals. They love they dearly departed, but their funerals be different. They don't give it up easy. You know, they hold their shit in until they get home. Maybe they go, they faint. They get at a funeral. Black people let it hang out right off. Wow! Jesus!
He became the voice of the African-American comic. He became the voice of anybody who came from a broken home. He became the voice of anybody who has had an addiction to drugs. He became the voice of anybody who has had a bad relationship or weird relationships, you know? He moved the needle from the comic talking about his mother-in-law or how fat he is to somebody who was really talking about the real fabric of who humanity is.
Because it's very hard to be sensitive about sex, man. It's scaring me. Can we take our time or something? I don't know. Did I go too fast? Look like I was trying to catch a train? So you want, like, maybe we take a bath or something and talk or some shit? I don't know what to do. Watch television. Maybe we don't have to fuck. I don't give a fuck, but... I'm just trying to be human with you like you are with me, okay?
It was clear that these characters that he was depicting were real. This life, whether it was being brought up in the brothel or, you know, his own troubles with drug use or relationships or marriage or kids, were real.
It is the album that I feel most connected to my father. I recognize the person talking. I know the stories. I was there when they happened. One of the stories on there is a little kid knocking something over, and my father does this whole rendition of the kid making up the story, and that was me.
Say, who broke that? Huh? Who broke that? I'm gonna tell you, okay? I'm not gonna get no spanking, right? Okay. Okay, I'm gonna tell you. Okay, I'm gonna tell you anyway if I get a spanker, okay? First. First win. First I'm gonna tell you, okay?
I remember being afraid when I knocked it over and that I was hesitating because I was kind of scared about what would happen.
You remember when you told me not to run? So I wasn't really running, real running. But I was running a little bit, just like that. My feet were going like that, like it was, looked like it was running, but it wasn't really running.
Part of the reason why I enjoyed it when I first heard it was because I had that reflection about it, that, oh, it was okay, it was funny. You know, I wasn't as in much trouble as I thought I was.
So when I opened the door like that, it fell down just a little bit. And it wasn't broke all the way so much. Okay? I said, yeah, okay, shit, you can tell that one, fuck it.
Richard Pryor was a genius of personification.
I was walking in the yard and someone said, don't breathe no more.
Maybe the greatest example of that on this album is the track about his heart attack.
I said, huh? I said, don't breathe no motherfucking more. You heard me. Okay, I won't breathe. And I tried to ease a little air inside of my mouth. And I said, say, motherfucker, did I tell you not to breathe? You told me not to breathe. You told me not to breathe. Well, where you going? Why are you walking? Stand still, motherfucker. Okay, I'll stand still. Get your ass down. Okay, I'm down. Don't hurt me. Shut the fuck up. You thinking about dying, aren't you?
Yeah.
Why didn't you think about that when you was eating that pork, motherfucker?
It's a way, you know, that he can turn a biological process into a kind of reckoning. What did I do to deserve this? He's exploring that through this dialogue with the heart.
That's when you put an emergency call in to God. Please. This is emergency. Can I talk to God?
I'll have to put you on hold.
And your heart gets mad if it finds out you was going behind his back trying to talk to God.
Was you trying to talk to God? No, I wasn't. You was a lying motherfucker.
This album marks a huge moment in American comedy. You know, in many ways, this is the moment in Richard Pryor's life where he's at the summit of his talent. Just after this album, he'll light himself on fire. And that fire will have an enormous effect on his person, on his psychology, on his body, on his ability to perform, on his confidence. So what you're getting in this album is Richard Pryor at the peak of his powers, at the peak of his insights. And I think it brings all those different aspects of Richard Pryor's life together in an incredible aesthetic form.
And my father told me that any time I saw a performer whose work I admired, I should let them know. I should tell them. We'd walk down the street and people would be like, hey, Rich, you know, out of the cars and stuff like that. And I remember asking my father if that bothered him, you know, if it was too much. And he said, no, I think it would really bother me when they stop yelling out of the car.
I can't go to porno movies like I used to, Jack, because people recognize my ass now already. You know, hey, Richard Pryor,
huh?
Hey, my man, give me...
Never mind, bro. That's cool. No, that's freeze on the handshake. That's all.
The late Richard Pryor, who died in 2005 at age 65. That piece was produced by Jenny Cataldo and BMP Audio. Richard Pryor's Wanted Live in Concert was recently chosen by the Library of Congress to be part of the National Recording Registry. You can hear dozens of other stories we've done about records honored by the National Recording Registry, such as Gloria Gaynor's single I Will Survive and George Carlin's comedy album Class Clown. They're all on our website, studio360.org. And as long as I'm sending you to the internet, if you subscribe to our show by podcast, you'll soon hear a new National Recording Registry segment about Rumble, the seminal rock and roll song by Link Wray.